Welcome back to the Puckin' Pod. On today's episode, we discuss NHL news, scores and standings, Major League Baseball playoff updates, and we introduce a fun new segment, and finally, we discuss our top three scary movies. That's coming up next, right here on the Puckin' Pod. Let's puckin' go. Well, gentlemen, here we are. It is yet another episode of the Puckin' Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
It's going to be another fun one, gentlemen. We got lots and lots to talk about, lots to pack in. So let's get started, gentlemen. We've got lots of NHL news and stuff to talk about. So why don't we talk a little bit about some of the most recent signings we've heard of?
Yeah, so the Golden Knights actually had got Shea Theodore under an extension, 7 years. I believe it was for 7.425 a year. So, you know, definitely getting a decent upgrade in pay, I would say.
Because he was just making 5.25, I think.
Yeah.
And that was, I believe it was a 6-year deal. I think he signed it in 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. It's hard to believe that Vegas has been around the league that long already.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually really hard to believe.
And they've already won a cup. Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, I tell you, we drove by their arena in Vegas when we went there, not this February that just passed, but the one before. And what a beautiful looking stadium, even from just the outside. Like, it just looks state of the art. Everything about that city, state of the art anyway. But it just, and then right across the highway from that is the football stadium.
Yeah, that's right.
So, which I imagine is probably where
the Raiders play.
The Raiders play. Yeah. And then, now I don't know for sure, but is that where the Athletics are going to move to? Are they going to play in the football stadium?
Does anybody know? I'm not sure, actually. Yeah, I haven't heard that.
When they're the team moving from Oakland, but
I know they're moving there. I don't know if that's going to be the stadium they play.
Either way, they're literally right across the highway from each other. You could walk from one to the other in probably 10 minutes. Although in Vegas kilometers, that might be actually about 30 minutes.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
The way they look. But yeah, massive structures, both beautiful looking. And they're just, literally like just on the outskirts of the city.
Yeah.
As you're leaving the strip, basically.
So, Shea Theodore signed a 7 years, $7.42 million a year. So it's a $51.98 million contract. And he's only 29. So, you know, for his, as a defenseman, they usually play late into their 30s anyways. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how that contract finishes up. But, I mean, it's a reasonable contract when you consider the cap is going up every year, too.
Well, and he's essential to their decor.
Oh, 100%.
He's worth probably every penny to them. Maybe might not get the same money in the market. Hard to say. You never know with defensemen. Some get a lot more than you expect. Others, you know, take a decent cut to sign with a team they want to sign with.
Yeah. This is kind of a satirical trivia question, but anybody have any guess what defenseman leads the franchise in all-time games played, points, goals, assists? Any guess?
The Golden Knights?
For the Golden Knights?
Nope.
As I said, it was meant to be satire. It's Shea Theodore.
It's a trick question.
It is kind of a trick question. Yeah.
So another major signing in the NHL, Jake Oettinger signed an 8-year contract, $8.25 million. And he's only 25 years old. So when you think about like the quality goaltender that he is, I think that's a reasonable contract for a goaltender like of his stature.
Man, that's such a Swayman kind of contract.
Yeah, well, he's different. He's a little different than Swayman, though.
Another big goaltender.
Yeah,
another big guy. Yeah, big tall.
But he's so young too. Like 25 is, you know, he's got a long ways to go. And you know what? He's probably going to sign another contract after that 8-year contract's done.
So, how does he compare to say what Shesterkin's now looking for?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because we're talking like 45% more money that Shesterkin's looking for than what Oettinger just got paid.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. The thing that kind of blows me away, I mean, there was so much drama when it comes to goaltenders this summer and this offseason that to see Shesterkin kind of put out there what he's putting out there. And we went through this with Swayman, and you're asking the question, is he going to be playing for the Rangers after all this is said and done? Because to me, it looks like he's kind of slapping him in the face.
Yeah, I think, you know, they talk about star power, obviously, in terms of their skills and stuff like that. But it's about, I think, sometimes how the teams market their players, too. And I imagine for some of these players, it gets to their head, and certainly their value feels it's a lot more because of the type of market that they're in. Again, Shesterkin is in the Big Apple compared to, say, Ottinger, who's in, you know, warm Texas.
And sports agents these days, they use the team to their advantage, right? They use social media, they use leaking information or so-called the leak of information to teams, to fans, to social media. And I think it's a tool that's used maybe too often. But you tend to see there's certain agencies or certain agents that do it in particular, and probably one of the reasons they get hired by particular clients in the first place.
Well, they get them that contract they're looking for, even if it's in a crude way, right? But it's definitely it can be a kind of a dog eat dog world when it comes to like the contracts that they sign and the contracts that they really don't want to sign.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm sure that Shesterkin will probably get signed by the Rangers, but it's going to be a dollar value that neither side really wants. You know, he wants so much money, but they're not willing to give him that much money. But I'm sure he's not going to want to go somewhere else. And who's going to afford him, really?
Well, I mean, look at the team and the production of that team every single season.
Yeah.
They're a contender every year, right?
And it's, a lot of it's because of goaltending.
That could be a team like Chicago. They always have the cap space. I'm sure they'd gladly give him that money.
Yeah, it's true. It is true. But, you know, it's weird to watch from the outside, I think. But, you know, let's talk a little bit more about some more signings. I know we were talking a little earlier before we started rolling about a specific coach getting signed.
Yeah, so this coach just recently got signed to a multi-year contract as well. He's ranks fourth on the NHL list for wins, and just recently guided Florida to their Stanley Cup.
He's fourth on the list all time for coaches.
Yes.
For wins.
In NHL,
yep. I would never have guessed that. You could have given me 10 guesses, and I probably wouldn't have gotten that.
To be fair, he's been coaching for one hell of a long time.
Yes, and he's an unreal coach.
Yeah, he is.
But I definitely wouldn't have put him that high on that list. That's crazy.
It surprised me when I looked it up, too. I was like, oh, wow. Going to be worth every penny for them at this
point. I tell you, I hate the Florida Panthers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't expect it. I don't expect you not to.
But I look forward to hearing about what that guy has to say every single time they play a game. He's just so, he's a no bull kind of guy.
Yep.
And on top of that, he's funny. He's hilarious. He has fun with the players. He has fun with the media. And he just seems like a guy you'd want to have a beer with.
I feel like he's a really honest coach too. Like when he talks to the media, he doesn't kind of give them roundabout answers. Like when he's talking about players with injuries and stuff, like he's fairly straightforward. He's like, yeah, he's got a lower body injury. He doesn't like, oh, he's fine. You know, he doesn't say stuff like that. There are a lot of coaches out there who do say stuff like that. And you're just kind of like, obviously he's not fine. Like, you know,
I think I remember when he was coaching in Toronto that I remember hearing that the media hated doing interviews with him because he was just very layman's, no nonsense, really just didn't give anything for them to bite off of. He's just like, yep. Okay.
And now, though, honestly, I think he still has that, but he has the humor to go with it.
Yeah.
So rather than sit there asking questions, he'll sit there, nope, not giving you that, not telling you that. And then he'd be like, come on, guys, I'm just kidding. Like, now he kind of has that side, too.
And I think, too, like when they won the Stanley Cup, and I remember he was doing interviews on the ice after the game, and he was talking about how he's come to realize that, like, you can't take your job too seriously. Like, you really need to enjoy what you're doing. And I think that is the secret to longevity in not only coaching, but playing too. And understanding that it is a job and you're there to do a job, but at the same time, you need to enjoy what you're doing. Yeah. And I think he's a perfect example of that.
He seems so humble too.
Yeah.
You know, talking and everything that has happened or any accomplishment that the team has always had, it's somebody else that did it.
Yeah, totally.
It's never him, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Great thing about coaches and coaches in the NHL, we actually just had our first female coach in the NHL.
That's right.
Miss Jessica Campbell.
Yeah. The Kraken. Yeah.
The Seattle Kraken. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. She was coaching with Dan Bylsma in the AHL, I think, last year. And that's where Dan Bylsma was coaching as well. So when he got hired to the Kraken, she came up with him, basically. And they obviously work well together. So Yeah.
Didn't it happen quickly, too, that I thought that she was hired as kind of like a skills development coach, and then like within 4 to 6 months or so, like she was promoted to
associate
coach. Yeah.
But pretty unbelievable when you think about, you know, I'm sure for her it's a thrill, the fact that she's coaching in the NHL, but it is a very serious role too, so I'm sure there's a lot of pressure involved with that, but it's pretty exciting. And I think it's exciting for the NHL to have its first female coach too.
I've seen a few videos of her online, and she is very down to earth, very very knowledgeable about hockey. Like she's earned her role for sure. I think she's going to do great.
Do you know what her specialty is as a coach? Like, is she special teams? Is she offense? Do you know? Or
I think that she's looking after the power play mostly. Like she's kind of one of the offensive coaches.
Offensive coach, yeah. So like special teams and you know forward positioning and things like that. Which is that's an important role as a head coach or as a assistant coach or head coach. But you know, it's pretty awesome. And the cool thing to see is that the Kraken are actually doing pretty decently for her. So
yeah, I would worry though because I think she's pretty young. You know, like, I don't know how old she is, but it would worry me that she's younger even than some of the players on the team. You don't, even with any coach, you don't get that very often. Never mind, like, a first-time female coach. Not that that would create a barrier, but it would seem like there might be some awkwardness or tension that way. Do you guys know how old she is?
I believe she's 32.
Yeah, 32 it says here. That's a good point. When you think about... when you think about the fact that she could be younger than some of the players on the team, part of me wonders, though, if you put yourself in a position where you're in the NHL and you see somebody who is in a coaching position, the respect might already be there just for the fact that she's achieved that accomplishment. And so, you know, the age really isn't a thing that they think about.
And I think, obviously, the camaraderie that you build, too, like, it's kind of no different than if you're being managed by somebody in a company and they're younger than you. At first, it probably feels awkward just because of the experience and the age difference. But once you build that, I guess, that relationship with somebody in a role like a coaching role, it actually becomes a lot more comfortable, a lot more easier. And yeah, for somebody even her age, she seems quite knowledgeable from what I've seen of her and read of her. So I think she's going to do great with them.
Well, I know in our own careers, I know you're in a supervisor role. Mm-hmm. So am I. Paul, have you ever been in a supervisor role?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we can all kind of attest to the fact that you really do need to earn the trust and respect of the people that you're managing or supervising. Yeah. And if you can do that, then it's not going to matter.
Not at all.
Either way, right?
Yeah, yeah. Not at all. It's definitely, it comes down to how you communicate and how you operate the situation, right? So, but yeah, it's definitely a really unique situation, and it's something that I'm excited about. I think it's really cool to see that kind of progress in the NHL. But speaking of forward moving and forward thinking, there's some really hot starts this year so far in the NHL.
Yeah, we got the Flames, Jets, and the Rangers. They all do not have a regulation loss yet.
It's insane when you think about the fact the Flames don't have a regulation loss yet, when they're considered to be one of the teams that probably aren't going to be in the playoffs this year.
Expected to rebuild this year.
Yeah.
So another thing that I find a little interesting about that, because we always talk about like the powerhouse of the Atlantic Division. And I mean, we know that the Central Division is unreal. But those teams that don't have a regulation loss yet, they're all in a different division.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I know it's early in the season, but that's kind of cool to see that teams are developing that strength early and, you know, kind of showing, hey, we're here to play, right?
Yeah, part of me wonders if they go into the season, specifically I think at Calgary, if they go into the season going, well, we're just going to give it everything we can to make sure we come away with a win because we are the ones who are being counted out.
Yeah.
Right?
Underdogs.
I think about the first game they played against Vancouver. They were down 4-1 and then they came back and won the game 5-4. To me, that's resilience from the start, right?
And you know, it's already starting to create rumors in the NHL. Like there's already, since they lost Elias Lindholm from trading him last year, Connor's already publicly come and said he's willing to trade his first round pick to get a centerman because he's happy with the start.
He's really happy with the way they started. It's funny because you don't want to jump the gun too much. You never know what's going to happen. They could fall down to earth, but yeah, I mean that is something. If you're a Flames fan, that's exciting because you were expected to not be anywhere, and here you are undefeated. What, six games in?
Six games in. They're 5-0-1.
I would say yeah.
Pretty incredible.
Very incredible.
Yeah.
Looking on the downside, there is some downsides too. There's the Nashville Predators, who made all those like major signings this offseason. They have one win in the first six games. The other five are regulation losses.
And the Edmonton Oilers, too. Like, you look at the start they've had. It's funny because I compare it a lot to the start they had last year, which was very similar. but, you know, part of me wonders if the Oilers kind of look at what's going on, and maybe Nashville, too, and they kind of go, like, maybe we aren't as good as we are supposed to be, or maybe last year was just a little lucky. I'm sure Oilers fans are swearing at me right now, but honestly, like, these are just questions that are being asked, right, on the analytics front, because 2 years in a row they have the same exact start. Something's got to give.
Yeah, and when you talk about expectations, right, like, obviously they have high expectations for themselves. If you look at a team like the San Jose Sharks, they're not expected to be that good, and their standing right now kind of reflects that without a win at the moment.
Yeah.
Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, as good as they are, where do they get most of their points? Power play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know where Edmonton is ranked for power play right now?
I think they're fairly low, aren't they?
28th.
Yeah. Oof. So
10.5% power play percentage succession rate right now for a team that relies on their... That's why they're not winning.
They don't just rely on the power play. They rely on those two specific players heavily, right? They have a lot of expectations for other players like Evander Kane, who obviously isn't playing right now, and like Evan Bouchard and, you know, all these other players. But they rely heavily on those two specific players, McDavid and Draisaitl, to make sure that they score goals. And so when you're only relying on those two players, it's just like, what can you do? You know, and you've got so much money tied up between those two players. It's like you don't have a lot of a freedom to make the moves that most other teams do, because you're so cap heavy on those two specific players. It's crazy. It's crazy to look at this season so far on both ends of the spectrum, where you've got teams that are just crazy starts right now. They're doing amazing. And then teams that are supposed to be doing amazing having a really, really bad start. And I was worried as a Canuck fan that I was going through that, but luckily they pulled together a couple wins. So we're doing okay. But it's been a really fun season so far. And we're only a couple weeks in. So we've got a few weeks ahead of us to get excited for.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit, gentlemen, about the Major League Baseball playoffs now. We're getting down to the end, aren't we?
Getting to October baseball. I mean, we are in October baseball, but what's always stereotypically known as October baseball, the dog days, the exciting times of baseball season coming to an end, and we've hit the World Series. We're ready for it.
World Series.
And it's exact, not that it was a hard prediction, but it was exactly how I predicted to be the Yankees and the Dodgers.
Yeah. So now, based on that prediction, who is your prediction now to win the World Series?
I'm still fully behind Ohtani. I think the Dodgers can rope it in. I'm pretty sure they can.
Yeah. Top to bottom, I think the Dodgers have a better team. I'd say the Yankees, minus Ohtani for the Dodgers, I would say the Yankees may have a little bit more well-rounded of an offense. But I just think that the Dodgers pitching, offense, combination, defense, it's... I don't know. It's kind of, I'm smiling and I'm smirking because it's pretty incredible to watch such two talented teams. I mean, that's why they're in the World Series. But again, it goes back to anything can happen in baseball, man.
That's true. I mean, anything can happen in sports, period. But you're absolutely right. I mean, literally, all you got to do is win one and then win another and then win another and then win another.
All it takes is a pitcher's little pointer finger to slide off the seam trying to throw a curveball, and you know, you get no revs on it, and it's boom, it's gone out of the park. That's all it takes.
That's all it takes. That's the beauty of sport, right? I think is the idea of anything being possible, and anything can change in a moment. So,
well, you know, some players that they tend to show up in the playoffs, and you know, Giancarlo Stanton for quite a few years in the last couple, at least the last couple, has been on a bit of a downturn, and he just won the ALCS MVP for his play of that series. So, you know, anything can happen, like we said, during baseball and during the playoffs.
He always knows how to turn that switch on, it seems. And he spends half the year on the bench being injured, but...
Right. He's got such a monster arm for hitting, man. Oh, like, man. It's crazy.
And he has no movement in his batting stance and his swing at all. Yeah. The only thing coming through is his hips and his arms. And pure, then there goes strength. The ball.
Pure strength.
So once this World Series is done, how long do we usually wait before all the moves start happening in the offseason?
In baseball, it happens pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, the winter meetings usually is when it starts. They start at least discussing.
I mean, because if you think about it, catchers and pitchers report to training camp in February.
Wow.
Yeah. Season usually starts beginning to middle of April. Spring training, I think, is mid-March. But, like, the beginning of February, like, for 6 weeks, pitchers and catchers are already working out and getting loose and training and stuff before anybody else even shows up.
That's crazy. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, I remember winter meetings, I think, last year. They started the last week of November, and it went into December at that point. And that's where a lot of the talk about Ohtani was in regards to the possibility of him signing with the Blue Jays. Obviously, it didn't work out that way in the end, but still, it's exciting news to pay attention to, obviously, during that time of the year. You know, it's Christmas, right?
So. Yeah. It's Christmas for everybody.
I have an interesting tidbit I want to talk about, and the highest payrolls in baseball. I'm going to give you the top five, but before I do that, I want to say what their amounts are. Because there's actually quite a bit of difference between one and five. So the top team, the highest spending team this year for payroll was $317 million. The next closest was $309 million. After that was $255 million. So quite the drop. Then down to $247 million. And then the fifth team is $241
million. Wow.
That's a big drop.
The Jays, as an example, ninth on that list.
Oh, wow.
At $218 million.
And they don't have a cap in baseball, right?
There is.
Oh, there is.
But there's a luxury tax that they can pay. Yeah. And even at $218 million for the Jays, they had to pay it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any guess who the top team is? I'll give you a hint. It's neither of the teams that are in the World Series.
I was going to guess the Yankees.
I think the Mets.
The Mets is correct. Yep. Yankees are number two. Houston is number three. Philadelphia is number four. And the Dodgers are number five. Hmm. Yeah.
But they're still in the top five.
I don't know why. I was thinking Florida would have been in there somewhere. Because they get a pretty decent tax break in Florida, don't they?
Yeah, they do. But I believe that both of the Florida teams are on the lower budget side.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay. Even Tampa Bay, they traditionally draft and develop like crazy.
Mm.
And then a lot like the Pirates this way, and the reason I know that is because my dad is a huge Pirates fan.
Oh.
They can never hold on to anyone because they can't pay them. They don't have the funds coming in, seems so strange in a place like Pittsburgh specifically because it's such a hockey town and it's such a football town.
Yeah.
Why doesn't baseball work there?
Probably because they can't hang on to players.
They need to hire Billy Bean. Yeah. Other exciting news in baseball, at least during the playoffs here, there was a record actually broken this year. That the record for clutch home runs was broken this year in this playoffs, where there was 11 game-tying or go-ahead home runs in the eighth inning or later throughout the entire playoffs.
And crazy.
That had been held for the last 10 years.
So that to me tells me that exactly what you said, that anything can happen in baseball. And that's a perfect example of that, right? A record number of game-tying home runs.
Now, are they just breaking the record? What was the previous number?
I don't know. Probably 10, I would think.
Yeah, that sounds about right. All right, gentlemen. So it is now my turn. We've had two previous episodes where you guys have gotten your new segments in. Today, we're going to introduce my new segment, and this segment is going to be a fun one. It is called This or That. It's very simple. All you have to do is tell me what you would choose between one thing or another, one scenario or another, and maybe even you could throw in a little why as well, because it's fun. It's for fun. So first things first, Wayne Gretzky or Mario Lemieux?
Ooh. I got to go with the great one. Just based upon the stats, a lot of those are going to have a hard time being broken. At least the goals could be broken, obviously. The all-time goals could be broken by Ovechkin, but it's impossible to catch the points and the assists.
I don't know about impossible. I mean, with Ovechkin this year,
He only needs 40.
That's what I said, the goals, for sure. The assists and the points.
I mean, everything else.
Yeah, you're never going to catch that.
Yeah.
Gretzky has more assists than anyone else has points.
That's true.
Just crazy.
I don't know what direction I want to go with this because I almost want to pick something different. But here's what I will say is I'll go with Gretz, but I think that it would be a lot closer if Lemieux wasn't injured so much.
That's a fair point.
In his career.
That's a fair point.
I think it would be closer.
I choose Lemieux, and only because I grew up as a Canucks fan watching players like Pavel Bure. And for me, the flash is what does it for me. I respect wholeheartedly what Gretzky brought to the NHL and what he was capable of. But I just, there's something about watching Lemieux play hockey that for me was something that I just admired way more. And maybe it's because I grew up hating the Oilers, so that's why. But I mean, obviously, I have mad respect for both players. But for me, I think Lemieux is the guy I'm going with. Okay, here's another one. Star Wars or Lord of the Rings?
I thought you were going to say Star Trek. Wow. I'm too much of a sci-fi guy not to go with Star Wars. I that whole Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker storyline, and you know, finding out after he's kissed his sister that Leia's his sister.
Did you think about that at the time when you watched it? You were like, "Wait
not
a second!"
Not when I was a kid. No, I wasn't.
You made out with your sister.
But sorry.
But yeah, I would go sci-fi over fantasy on that one.
Hot take. LOTR is dumb. I'm going with Star Wars. and as
I knew where you were going with that.
As I said earlier in our podcast episodes that I actually saw Return of the Jedi first.
Right.
And then A New Hope. And then Empire Strikes Back. And then I literally didn't watch any of the other ones until I was probably in my mid-20s.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't want to. I just never did. Never got around to it. And then when I watched, I guess, episode 1, 2, and 3, technically, they're awesome. Everything is just great.
I have to agree. I mean, for me, it's just the sentimental value of what Star Wars was to me versus Lord of the Rings. I didn't see Lord of the Rings till I was an adult, whereas Star Wars I watched when I was a kid. I never read the books, the Lord of the Rings books, so I don't really, I can't put myself in that position. But for sure, that to me is the big one.
I do have a quick question about Lord of the Rings because I have seen the first one and then snippets of the other two. There's two others, right? And then it splits off, right?
Yeah.
What is the appeal? Now, what I mean by that is if you take away the fan side of it, like, you know, oh, I grew up reading the books and I just like the fantasy side of it. Like, you guys are both film buffs, more so on the technical side than I am. Is there anything about, like, the cinematography or the way they're... Like, is there anything like that that sticks out for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the cinematography, the look, the authenticity of the set design and huge, like, when you're watching it, you know how when you watch a movie that's like, heavily CG, that and it pulls you out of that movie because you're like, that's obviously fake. That's obviously, you know, fake. The way they did everything to the finest detail was what made those movies so incredible. The writing was incredible. The direction, just you know, all the right choices. And for me, that's what I liked the most about it.
Yeah, the production of it, like what has become super well known now for the work that they did on the Lord of the Rings, and they're used in a lot of epic films now too for the detail they put into their props, the detail into the costume design. Peter Jackson used miniature models for a lot of his shots when he was doing like the Minas Tirith and I can't remember Saruman's Isengard. There we go. I got it. The Hobbits are going to Isengard. he used miniatures for a lot of those shots. It wasn't even CG, but there's CG built into it. But you know, you have practical and the CGI. It's just the production value on those movies was really, really well worth it. And the fact that it was an epic story too, based upon epic books.
And I mean, I know I can attest to this because of band class, but what about the score? You know, like...
Yeah,
definitely.
Incredible.
I remember this, just a quick little story. I want to say it was grade 9 or 10. So that would have been for me, 03? So I think it was right after, like a couple years after the first movie was released. And I remember my band teacher, he had this unique way of explaining things when he was trying to get a point across. And he was a very flamboyant man. Everything was boisterous and like top 10, like taking it to 11 every single time sort of thing, right? And I remember him talking about like the song and the different parts and how like the trombones and the trumpets would have the certain part, you know, like the
doo-doo-doo,
which would be like the flutes and the clarinets. But in the meantime, you'd have the trombones going boom, 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 boom,
yeah,
like little things like that. And he's like, and I remember him shouting out, like, just think of it as like popcorn in a machine. Bump, bump, bump. And he's just like flying around the room, dancing around, just a crazy man. But man, was he a lot of fun. But just, I remember, you know, playing that soundtrack as a drummer and just the technicality of, and how it changes time signatures. And you get to like this whole story. It's a whole orchestra, right?
Yeah,
and,
you feel it. Yeah, you really do.
It was cool.
And it creates an emotion inside you. And I think that's what appeals to people when it comes to that. All right, this one is scenario based. Greatest comeback in sports or greatest plot twist in a movie?
Oh, gotta go with sports. It's so much fun watching a team come back, and you know, it's the odds that they're not going to win it and they still pull through, and there's so much emotion involved with that, right? I have to go with comeback in sports.
I'll go with sports, and I think to everything that you said, but the difference for me is that in movies, you see plot twists often. You don't often see that big comeback in sports.
That's
and
true.
When
like
it does
the
happen,
underdog story.
Yeah. It's not planned.
Yeah. No, I could definitely agree with you on that. I mean, there are some pretty good plot twists out there. I know of a few movies that happen to be your favorites that are huge plot twists, but you're absolutely right. I think the underdog story is more appealing only for the fact that it's not expected.
Yeah.
Right. When a team is down 3-1 in a series, you know, say a championship series, and they come back and win it, that is so unexpected that that's what makes it that much more exciting for sure. Unless it's against your own team, i.e. Canucks 2011.
On the fly, is there one movie that comes right to the top of your head as far as plot twist goes that you guys are just like, holy what?
Oh, yeah.
What is it?
The Sixth Sense. I mean,
that was like the original plot twist movie.
It's literally, it should have been called The Big Plot Twist.
Quite literally.
What's yours, Paul?
That was originally mine was Sixth Sense.
Hilarious, because that's mine too.
Yeah.
When I think of something that just blows your mind, you're just like, what? Paul.
So I know with this one, I know this which one between these two that Paul is going to pick, but I'm curious if you're even interested in either of these movies.
Then let me answer first.
Okay, so Brandon, I'll ask you first. Inception or Interstellar?
Are you talking about preference?
Yeah.
I just assume. Oh, man. I just like ghost sweared into the into the microphone because this is hard. Man. I'll go with Inception. And that's hard for me because I really, really like space movies.
Yeah.
But I'll go with Inception just. The original idea, I mean, Interstellar is pretty original too, but just the completely original idea of Inception, all the stuff that happens in that. I remember watching them I watched a clip of them doing the scene where the train was coming through the city and knocking it all. And like, that was literally a train constructed on top of a vehicle so that it could drive into the city. And like, they did everything the way it should have been done.
Yeah.
And just the mad respect for that movie and everything that it did. And it's one of those epic long movies that I could watch every day.
You're giving me two Christopher Nolan choices?
Come on. Exactly. That I thought for sure, like, I'm pretty sure I know which one you're going to go with. But I like I said, I chose that because I feel like they're both probably the best of all of his movies, in my opinion anyway. And I'm pretty sure I know which one I would choose, but I'm very curious if you're going with the one I think you will.
So funny enough, like I love Interstellar, and yes, Inception is my choice. It's in my top movies.
Of course.
So yeah. I definitely have to go with it.
Hence why I knew, yeah.
However, I don't think it's his best film. And a lot of people will probably disagree with me on this, but I watched it during the pandemic. I thought Tenet was actually his best directed film.
Now, I mean, we could totally deep dive into that movie, but it's... It's one of the, and this is the thing that Christopher Nolan is famous for, and I'm going to bleep this, so, you know, watch your ears, but he's famous for creating mind movies, right? Where he makes you question your own existence.
Reality.
When you watch a movie of his. And to me, Interstellar was like that. And so, I mean, they both were, Inception and Interstellar, but Interstellar, because I love space movies too, that's why it stands out to me. And also, for the record, the main character's name is Joe Cooper. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Played by Matthew McConaughey.
Coop.
But, He goes by Coop. I didn't know for the longest time his first name was Joe, but that's his name in the movie, is Joe Cooper.
Just the way they show the time differences.
Yes.
Like, oh, just nuts. Just like, mind-blowing.
It does. Sure. It throws you off. And I mean, like, Interstellar's the same exact way. You literally watch, or not Interstellar, pardon me, Inception is the same way. It makes you question your own reality. Like, am I really alive here? And I mean, you know, there's all this talk from Elon Musk about how we're living in a simulation. It's because of those type of movies where you actually think to yourself, that could be real. That could be true.
Well, one of the great things about Christopher Nolan is he does tend to actually use a lot of facts and science, like research that he's done on these things, like anything from the lucid dreaming that was used for Inception, the physics for how gravity could affect time in Interstellar. Like, this is stuff that he had gone to the people that were the experts in this and asked the information and was able to work that into his scripts. Amazing writer, director, the whole works. Like, I don't think there's a Christopher Nolan film that I don't like.
Nice. Yeah, and I agree. I'm with you.
And I'm going to be honest with you guys. Again, not I'm against it, but I haven't seen Tenet yet.
It's another one of those movies where you'll be like, I don't get it.
Huh?
And to be fair, that's the point of the movie.
Right.
When you watch it and you seriously question, like, what you watched, that's the point. You're not supposed to understand.
It will probably be one of those movies that if you watch it probably 3 or 4 times, you'll really then start to click in on it. Even Inception, like, I probably have seen that movie 100 times. I'm not kidding. And I find something new almost every single time I watch that movie. Mm-hmm. It's that in depth in that.
I started doing something recently that I said that I would never ever do, and that's put subtitles on while I'm watching.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what you actually pick up.
100%.
That again, you've seen the movie 100 times, but you don't, like, just certain dialogue things that you go, oh, that's what they're talking about.
My wife watches movies with subtitles because of that reason. She tries to make sure she catches everything. What's so funny about that is she also watches movies while looking at her phone. So I don't understand how she catches anything. But I got two more for you. So the first one, they're both sports related. The first one is... Now, you, Brandon, I'm thinking about you in this specific situation. You don't like a couple of different sports. One, you don't like soccer. One, you don't like football. So, given the choice, gun to your head, soccer or football?
Watching, playing, just kind of being a fan of?
Being around.
Football. I'll pick football.
Okay, why do you pick football?
Well, because I absolutely cannot stand soccer. This is my opinion, but I don't think there's enough integrity in the game of soccer.
Fair enough.
Football, I can understand why people fall in love with it. I understand the chess match that it is. What I don't understand, and I had buddies that played in high school, that you're up at 5 a.m. in the morning to practice 5 times a week to play one friggin' game.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems pointless to me.
Yeah.
You know, to work so hard to play one game when you have no idea what's going to happen in that game anyway.
No disrespect to any of our listeners who play and love football.
That's right. And like I said, I can completely understand it. And I do get the game.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not for me. And I find this funny because I'll say this point, you guys will probably laugh and roll your eyes at me. But I don't like watching football because I find it boring.
No, I've heard that statement from other people before who don't like football too. I feel that way about watching baseball. Like, that's how I feel about baseball.
And here's my but. I could watch baseball 24/7.
Yeah, yeah. And I could watch football 24/7. But I also love football too. Like, yeah. I'm a big fan of football. So what about your softball?
Well, you wouldn't want to ask this question.
So you, now you like football, correct? Or is you like soccer too?
I would probably prefer football. Like, you wouldn't want to ask this question to like a European, because I'd be like, you're asking the same question.
Yeah, I know.
What are you on about, mate?
To our European listeners, I'm talking about American football and European football.
I would probably, I would choose football over European football, soccer. Just, it's more intense. It's like what Brandon said. There's a little more integrity, I think, to the game. And it's, I don't mean that to be offensive to people that love European football or, you know, soccer in general. I don't mean that to be offensive. It's just you do see the flops. I hate it when it happens in the NHL. So you see the flops happening in European soccer,
it's
football.
It's frustrating.
It's so frustrating. You rarely ever see anything like that. You'll see somebody have a temper tantrum on the field in football, But it's such an intense game, and you have to be strong through that game.
In actual football, you see some of the scariest injuries. Like, I've seen guys' arms get broken. Like, I remember one time I was watching a BC Lions game where they were in a scrum after the whistle blew, and these guys were going at it, but, like, I guess they had their – like, the one guy had his arm locked within his arm, and he literally twisted his body, and it snapped his arm the wrong direction. It was hard to watch. And the guy's arm's broken. Like, he's, you know,
it's like a Steven Seagal movie.
Yeah. And it's just because they were mad at each other, right? So, like, it is an intense, much more intense sport than obviously soccer. Literally nothing's less intense than soccer. I feel like ping pong is more intense than soccer.
I think it's the fans that make soccer that much more intense for them, right? Like, just it's the allegiance that you have to your team. Yeah. We all have allegiances for our North American sports, but I think it's a bar up.
Oh, yeah, overseas. Yeah.
And I mean, soccer's global, too, right? It is. Like, it is probably the most universally played sport in the world.
It is the most universally played sport. Yeah. I like soccer. I enjoy watching both soccer and football, but I totally understand and agree with you when you choose one over the other. For me, I would choose football over soccer, too.
And if you think about soccer, when we talk about the integrity and the fact that we hate this flopping and stuff, and you're seeing it more and more as the years go on, what is so annoying and frustrating about it, from my perspective, is the fact that it has such an impact on the game.
Yeah.
Right?
It does.
If you get a red card or whatever, if you do something so egregious or what looks to be egregious that they kick you out of the game, your team's down that player.
Yeah.
Or if it's in a certain area on the field, right, you get a penalty kick. That goal is huge, man. If you're a goalie, you're guessing.
Yeah.
You've got a 50% chance, essentially, of saving the ball.
Yeah. It's
right?
True.
And so when you see the flopping and you look at it and you go, the guy didn't even get touched, or there was barely a tug on his jersey, yet the impact on the game that it has and for that team, you're just like, this isn't even real. This can't be.
It reminds me of, I remember watching a celebration once on one of the soccer games, and this might not be fully PG-13, but I guess the guy scored, they all went rushing at him while he slid on the ground, and then one of his teammates came and bit him on the wank. I'm like, I don't think you would ever see that anywhere in North American sports.
No, absolutely not. So the last one, save the best for last, they always say. And my last one for you guys as Leaf fans is, you have a choice. You have to give me one or the other. You can't say neither, all right? Montreal Canadiens or the Boston Bruins?
To do what?
Like, you're cheering for.
Oh, I was going to say, like, get in a crash or something?
No, so gun to your head, you have to cheer for one of these two teams.
Well, Rat Boy's never getting my vote, so I'll go with the Canadiens over Boston.
Maybe explain yourself to the listeners who don't understand what you're talking about.
So, unfortunately, Brad Marchand is one of those players that I just cannot stand.
The captain. The captain of the Boston Bruins,
my And name. he's been depicted in comics and stuff as being like a rat. He kind of looks like a rat when you look at his face. He plays like a rat, in my personal opinion, too. He's very sneaky, sly, and kind of just not... He's not apparently in real life, he's quite gentlemanly, but he's not... In my personal opinion about the game, I don't consider him a gentleman-type player. And that alone would push me towards Montreal, and the fact that Montreal is one of the winningest team in the NHL
and in Canada.
Oh, Joe. I will have to pick Boston. I can't pick Montreal. I can't do it.
So explain yourself.
What I will say about Brad Marchand is, he's the type of player you always want on your team. And I've vouched for years that I wouldn't want that player on my team. But what I will say is I am growing a little bit less hate for him. Not necessarily respect, but I hate him a little bit less. I think he's toned it down a bit since he became captain. And what I mean by that is that his antics maybe aren't as often. They're not any less egregious at some points. He's still cheap. He still runs his mouth and doesn't do anything about it. The only guys he fights are smaller than him. And so that part I don't like. But I think he's taken the captaincy role and ran with it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know what? He made a comment today. I was watching a video on TSN this afternoon, and they had asked him because it came out publicly, and they showed the clip of the game where the Boston head coach went to Marchand and absolutely chewed him out for a play that he'd made, a turnover, I think, that resulted in a goal. And you basically, you know, you see the clip and Marchand's got his kind of head down on the bench. He's just looking straight ahead, just, you know, not really making any body movement, body language at all. And then the reporters asked him, you know, how does that affect you when your coach is, you know, loses it on you and that sort of thing, or, you know, he's hard on you. And Brad Marchand simply, I'm paraphrasing, but was basically like, I don't know why this gets such scrutiny. Mm-hmm. I screwed up.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he be all over me?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, players and everybody needs to take accountability for what they're doing. And I did respect, quote unquote, that comment. I have to go with Boston. I just, no matter what it is with Montreal, I cannot do it.
And I'm sure you're not alone when it comes to Leaf fans or even fans on the East Side who aren't Montreal fans, in that they can't cheer for a team like Montreal.
I might even have a tougher one. I might even pick the Senators over the Habs.
Wow.
Yeah.
That actually surprises me. I will say that surprises me. But is it because of the rivalry they have?
Yes. Yes. And over the years, they play each other the most. That year with the Canadian Division. Recently with Montreal being a perennially underachieving team, yet no matter what happens, it always seems to be a competitive game with the Leafs, and it's frustrating to watch. It's those games that you think your team should win every single time, and if you might be batting 500.
I think the reason behind that, too, is not just because of the hockey that's being played on the ice. It's a combination of that and the fans in the rink trying to out-cheer the other fans. Because I know as a Canuck fan, when Leafs come to Vancouver, there's more Leaf fans in the stands than there are Canuck fans. And it pisses us off, right? Yeah. Just like Montreal, same exact thing. There's more Montreal fans out there than there is, you know, Canuck fans. And that's something that really fires up each side. And I think that makes a lot of sense when it comes to the rivalry.
And you got to give props to the fans of the Habs and at the Bell Center, because that's probably the loudest arena.
Yeah.
No matter what, no matter how they're playing, it's the loudest arena in hockey.
Absolutely. So my perspective is obviously different than yours, because my team doesn't play the Habs all the time. They do play them, but they don't play them all the time. So for me, I would way rather cheer for Montreal than Boston. And I do hate Boston, and I still hate Boston. Since 2011, I still hate Boston. I hate them less now, obviously, because, you know, I don't have any, you know, for me, it's like the mindset isn't like I'm not mad at them anymore from 2011, but I still don't like them. I still would never cheer for them, but that's a tough decision.
Okay, real quick then, let me throw this at you. Chicago or Calgary?
Yeah. So I'll say Calgary, and the reason why is because I don't think the rivalry is there like Chicago's. Now, we did lose to Calgary in 2015 in the playoffs, which is more recently than we did to Chicago, but we played Chicago 3 years in a row, lost to them 2 years in a row, and then finally beat them in 2011. So that's a tough one, but I would rather cheer for Calgary, I think, between the two.
I would kind of say that rivals the Leafs in Tampa. Kind of the same situation where they play each other like 3 years in a row. And even now, they didn't play last year.
Yeah.
And I still hate them.
There's still a dragon, and you still want to slay that dragon, right?
Well, Boston was the same thing for a bit there, where they played them, I think, 3 playoffs in a row.
That's right, yeah. Now, you guys did beat Tampa in the playoffs, I think,
two seasons ago.
Yeah.
When they finally made it to the second round, which is pretty exciting. Yeah. But yeah, gentlemen, that is This or That. That is the segment that I will be bringing here, not every time, but every once in a while. It's going to be a lot of fun to do more options. I like that we mix it up between the movies and the sports, too. So if you listeners have any suggestions for This or That ideas, please add them to our comments section. Let us know what you guys think. We are available, as you know, on Twitter or X and Instagram and Facebook, YouTube. Spotify. Am I missing anything? Of course, Spotify. Do they leave comments on Spotify, though?
I'm pretty sure you can comment on it.
I'll take your word for it.
Watch our TikToks. We just made some.
Yes, we did. We embarrassed Brandon in one of them, so that's exciting.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys, for telling me.
But gentlemen, we come to our final segment of the pod, and that segment, of course, being we're talking about movies. Now, Halloween is just around the corner. When this podcast airs, it will be the week of Halloween. So we're going to talk about scary movies.
Ooh.
That was totally improvised. Nice job. All right, so top three scary movies of all time. Paul, give us your number three.
So my number three, this movie scared the little crap out of me when I was a kid. I saw the first 10 minutes and I didn't see the rest of it because I couldn't sleep for like 3 weeks after it.
Did you eventually see the rest of it?
I did eventually see the rest of it when I got older. The first time I saw it was when I was 10 years old, and the main villain out of the scary movie kills somebody with the hook that he has in his hand, and that was from Candyman.
The Candyman can.
Well, you had to say Candyman, Candyman, Candyman.
Five times for that one, I think, in the mirror, right?
It was five, yeah. Oh. And that one scene alone, like, terrified me for years. Like, literally years. I was scared of watching the movie until I finally...
Were you also scared just to like look in a mirror? Because that the whole Bloody Mary thing. It's like that's my kids to this day are still like, I don't want to look in the mirror. I'm scared. I'm like, really, guys, come on. But it's true.
Your kids,
my kids.
I wouldn't do that.
What, look in a mirror
and say Bloody Mary? No,
I've. let's replay that
and say Bloody Mary. No,
I've. No, like my kids, first of all, the fact that my kids know about it, but they think that everything they see on YouTube and all those little videos, like the YouTube shorts that they watch, are all real, right? So they talk about this Bloody Mary thing, and then they record them saying Bloody Mary three times in a mirror, and then boom, something appears in the mirror. I've done it a million times just to prove that it's not real. It's like, I'm sorry to let you down, but it's not real.
Plot twist, Joe's actually dead.
Yeah, maybe I am Bloody Mary.
I'm pretty sure I even made sure my friends didn't say Candyman that many times, too, because I was actually so scared.
100%, man.
At that time, because the character, when you see it, like, when you're older and you realize that it's just a movie, you look at him, he's really not scary at all. Like, it's just a guy with a hook in his hand. But whatever it was during that time, it made me literally piss my pants.
The bees for me.
Like, yeah, that
was creepy too. Yeah. Yeah,
and the fact that actually, you know what, I was about to make a spoiler. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Good job catching yourself on that, Brando. What's your number three?
I'll go with the Blair Witch Project. Came out when I was 12, and I think it was the first of its kind with like the found film or found footage type of film, and being out in the woods and just it seemed real the way it was done, and just bone-chillingly creepy. What I will say is that my buddy and I, who I go four-by-in with, he's got a side-by-side. And when we used to hang out in high school and stuff, it was the same thing. Like, we'd have sleepovers. We'd ride our bikes down to Crazy Mike's in Harewood Mall. We'd get, you
know... Shout out to Crazy Mike's.
That's right. We'd get, like, our three movies or whatever, and then maybe one game, and get our snacks and stuff at the store there, and then we'd ride our bikes back, and we'd spend all night watching movies and stuff, right? And we used to scare the crap out of each other constantly. And so we decided last year that we were going to go out in his side-by-side out in the bush, and he's got a tablet, and we downloaded the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, my God.
So we literally got to a remote area like 40 kilometers away from anything.
That's hilarious.
Out past like Boomerang Lake, basically towards the west side of the island, behind Mount Benson. And we parked up on a hill, and we watched the Blair Witch Project. Funny. It didn't quite have the same effect as it did when I was 12, but that's my number three.
That's, you know what, and I hate to copy you, but that was my number three as well. Like, Blair Witch Project scared the living daylights out of me when I watched it as a kid. I remember not being able to sleep that night. The image of the guy standing in the corner, you know, it just threw me for... it's one of those... So it's not just the fact that it's a found footage movie where you believe it's real based on what you're watching, but it's also the fact that it relies heavily on you using your imagination. And I think there's nothing more powerful than your imagination. Nothing scares you more than what you can come up with in your own head. And I think that's something that's so brilliant with what they did. And so that's also my number three. So we are sharing ideas. Paul, number two.
So I'm going to go with one of the movies that Ellen Burstyn was very well known for, and that's The Exorcist. That movie was terrifying in terms of the little girl, and you know, when she's like twisting her head around, and just the voices that she makes, and the makeup that was used, just terrifying to see those images.
I saw that later in life, and I was still pretty terrified watching it. like you say, like it was, it came out in 70 or it might have been 74. Those two years ring a bell.
73.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm wrong. Either way, for that time, like you say, the makeup specifically and how they film, like you say, her head spinning around. You're just like, what is going on here? I'm out.
Honestly, like the big thing for me growing up, the biggest things I was afraid of were things that I didn't understand. Things I didn't know and things that I didn't understand. And the idea of somebody being like possessed was freaky as all hell, because yeah. Like your mind as a child is like, that's got to be possible, right? Like, who comes up with this stuff? And so yeah, it's definitely, I was going to choose The Exorcist and then you just said it, so now I'm like, I got to choose another one. But that's okay, I did have another one in the bank. So
even with that movie too, like Bernstein did talk in interviews that film was jinxed, that like there was up to 9 deaths to like crew on that movie and it was being, wow, when it was being produced. And herself, she actually had a major injury where there was a scene where they had to like pull her with a rope because she was being flung back by the possessed demon, and it like damaged her spine. And wow, it's been like that for her whole life since that movie.
That's incredible.
That is, yeah.
Brando, what's your number 2?
I'm going to go with a movie came out in 2012, and I'm curious to know if this is the most recent out of all of our scary picks, because I know generally you get the scary creepiness from like older type movies, and I'm going to go with Sinister. Hmm. It's interesting because I actually watched a TikTok where you can find the Puck and Pod, by the way, a couple weeks ago when they were doing kind of similar to what we're doing now. They were kind of going over their scary movies, and there was actually like a scientific formula that they measure like the heart rates of people and average it out. And Sinister is actually, I believe, like number 2 on the all-time list of like average highest heart rate throughout the movie.
Oh, wow.
As just an interesting stat.
I've actually never seen that movie before.
You've never seen Sinister?
No.
Oh, it's terrifying. And I think one of the reasons it's terrifying, and I was just thinking about this as I knew it was going to be my number 2 pick, why does it really creep me out? And I think there's a couple of reasons. The first reason is that, again, part of the movie, and I won't spoil too much, but he finds a box of home videos.
Mm.
And then basically he has to play them on a projector. And seeing the home videos and what takes place, like it's just, it gives me goosebumps thinking about it, yeah, to be honest with you. It's one of those. And the other thing that makes it creepy, which is, this won't be a spoiler at all, but I think people can probably relate, is the fact that in scary movies, you see teenagers running and from a guy with a knife, or kids are scared, or, you know, there's creepy kids in a movie with, you know, the weird smiles and the bright eyes. And it's just like, kid, nope, not happening. But for me, what becomes the scariest, I think, is when the adults are like bone chillingly scared.
Yeah.
And something terrifies them more than anything. Kids are supposed to be scared.
That's right.
You know, but when you generally are watching, you know, like Ethan Hawke is the actor, and when he's watching these videos, it actually pans to him and you can see his genuine reactions, and you're just like, oh God, like
makes it
just
scarier.
Makes you just want to get a blanket and a hoodie and like move away from the world. Like it's creepy.
Yeah, gotta give props to the acting and those kind of things, like to show fear to that level. Yeah.
I definitely agree. My number 2 is from 2005. It's actually a remake from an original, but I remember watching this movie and I will admit, as I got older, it gets harder for movies to scare me. But this movie, I enjoyed it as a scary movie. And I'll admit it was scary. It just obviously, as I get older, like I say, movies don't scare me as much. But this movie is called The Amityville Horror. This one stars Ryan Reynolds, this version. But again, it is a remake from, I think, 1970s or 1970s.
Definitely
70s.
70s?
We'll say 70s, yeah. It's quote-unquote based on a true story. That's what's why I think it makes it scary. But basically, the idea of a possessed house basically kicking people out, trying to get people to move out and scare people to make them want to move out. And it's just, you know, it was a good movie. It was well done, and it scared people purposefully. It did its job, and I thought the acting was really good. And it's not number 1 for a reason, because it's not like I say scary, but it is a scary movie that I think is quite a good one. So that's my number 2.
Our buddy Mike used to live in a place that I always, and I seriously thought it looked like the Amityville Horror House.
It probably was similar design. Paul, what is your number one?
So my number one, it is two movies, but the movies are very, very much tied together. And I actually don't find the movie so much scary. It's just the tone that it sets. And that's A Quiet Place 1 and 2.
More startly than it is.
More startly, and the fact that it is quite a silent movie because the creatures in that movie react to sound. I won't go into too many spoilers or details on this. I'll try my best not to. John Krasinski is one of his breakout directing films. And just the tone that he sets in regards to these creatures, these aliens, and their reactions to sound, and the methods you have to take to protect your family from possibly being killed by these things. It was an intense film. It was really enjoyable. And like I said, there are parts that made you startled for sure. I didn't necessarily find it so scary. Is the fact that it was just a well thought out horror film and scary film.
I feel like the one cool thing, the one like major part of a movie like that where there's no audio, there's no talking, is you rely heavily as an audience. You rely heavily on facial expression, like actual emotion.
Yeah.
So it's as an actor, it's harder to perform in a movie like that, more difficult to perform in a movie like that. And they did an incredible job.
They did a really good job. And Emily Blunt's amazing, by the way.
Amazing. Brando, what do you think? Number one.
I am going to go with one of those movies again. It's the time of my life that I watched it. You guys might think this is kind of funny now, but at the time I watched it, The Ring.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely terrifying. The sounds combined with the images at the, you know, simultaneously, and it just gets every sense in your body. And I know that's the point, but it just gets every sense in your body tingling, right? And just thinking of, like, a girl coming out of a TV, like, what the hell is this, right? But honestly, just, I remember going to the theater with my cousin at the time. I think we were 12. And it literally was one of those scenarios where I had my hoodie over my head and my hands like up to my cheeks and my eyes almost the entire film.
Wow.
Because it just right from the beginning, it gets you like the sounds and like I say, the creepiness of it. You don't know what's coming. And again, at the time, I think it was another one of those movies that was kind of like the pilot movie in that genre.
Yeah, like started a new trend.
Yeah, it did. It did. You know, like The Grudge came shortly after that. Things like that, right?
Yeah.
And again, yeah, being 12 years old, just absolutely terrifying.
I think I remember when Peter Jackson was casting for King Kong, part of what made him cast for Naomi Watts' character is the fact that he had heard her scream in the Ring movies, and that had inspired him for having her in the King Kong films.
I had a little thing for Naomi Watts when The Ring came out.
That's why you were there. That's why you were
there. And it was so funny because I had no idea that she was British. When I heard her actually speak, I was like, what the hell?
Well, gentlemen, my number one movie is a world-famous scary movie, and I think you're going to know it as soon as I say it, but this movie, you know, like I say, as I watch it now as an adult, it's not scary so much as it is kind of intense, and there's a lot, and it's a thriller. But this movie is called The Shining, and, you know, it's one of those movies where, you know, it doesn't matter what corner you look around, there's always something different. And you can watch it a million times, and it's still just as good when you watch it now versus when you watched it back then. The movie came out in 1980, so it is before my time in terms of, like, before I was born. But so I never got to see it in the theater, but getting to see it in general, it is such a well-done movie, such a well-acted movie, and, like, highly intense and incredible. It's a really, really intelligent, based on a book, obviously, but, you know, Stephen King did a really great job with the writing of that.
Well, and Kubrick was so visionary. He's just such a visionary director for the movies that he did. A lot of them were done before we were even born.
Didn't he say, though, that that was actually the film he hated the most out of the ones that he made? Not necessarily because of the success or anything, but like the content. Like, I don't know.
I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Don't quote me, but I think it is.
Maybe they just had a lot of mishaps or something that happened while filming.
Maybe it was the whole process.
Yeah,
but I agree with you in the like it's a movie that spans generations.
Yeah,
it's used. You hear it in pop culture today. How many listeners out there have at one point in their time gone, here's Johnny.
Yeah, exactly.
Like probably every single one.
Now, to be fair, he stole that from the Johnny Carson show.
Absolutely.
But the other one is all blank and no blank, make blank and blank blank, right? That is from the from Friends where they quoted the book The Shining. But it's no, it's definitely it's a quotable movie. It's intense and it's it is what you would call a cult film. Like it's got a cult following. And there's a reason it's that good, right? So it's definitely for me. That's my number one scary movie.
Did you ever see Dr. Sleep?
Yeah, the sequel. Yeah, I haven't seen it. I never saw it, but I've heard that it is in fact it's the little boy growing up basically, which is pretty incredible. Ewan McGregor, right?
Yes.
Red Rob. Red Rob.
So, gentlemen, that is going to do it for this episode, this Halloween episode.
Ooh, spooky.
We hope that you guys listening do have a wonderful Halloween, a nice, safe, happy Halloween with your families. If you have kids, you know, make sure you enjoy trick-or-treating. I know, Brandon, you're going to have kids here trick-or-treating from your house, right?
They're gonna we do a tradition every year. Basically, we set up the propane fire pit. I've got my DJ equipment set up and my lights going in the garage. And I think people have started to notice because we've done it 5 years in a row.
That's right, yeah.
And we're going to do something a little different this year. We're going to hand out little costume rubber duckies.
Oh!
Something a little fun.
I like it, yeah. It's fun. I think kids are going to love that, actually.
I think so.
Something different. Right. And Paul, are you going to take your little boy trick-or-treat?
This year, he's not with me for trick-or-treating, but that's okay. I still have a costume for him to take, and hopefully he'll be able to wear that at school this year. It's his first year in school doing kindergarten, so
right,
think he'll have a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I know I'm going to take my kids trick-or-treating with my sister's kids, so we're going to kind of go out and about around their house, the other end of town, but the kids are going to have a blast. They always do every year.
Yeah.
But yeah, once again, you know, to the listeners out there, make sure you guys are safe. You know, don't if you're going to play with fireworks, please be careful, be safe. We want to keep you listening to our podcast, so don't blow your ears off. But also, please be safe and have a good time. Do not drink and drive, as we've said in the past, you know, podcasts. Make sure you guys are safe out there. Once again, for the Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We will see you in the next one.